You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to Filmmaking Conversations with Damian Swaby. Listen to conversations with award-winning filmmakers, directors from the golden age of television, and creatives from the indie film community who continue to inspire the next generation of filmmakers. And now, over to your host, Damian Swaby.
Johnny, with the coolest surname of them all, Catalano. How are you today?
Good. How are you, Damian?
I'm not too bad. I'm really, really in high spirits to speak to you because I've been thinking about film festivals for a while. A friend and I went to a film festival not long ago and we were quite disappointed by the experience. The champagne was nice and the food. But other than that, it was a pretty much a waste of time. So we've been talking about festivals and thinking about them because I've got a few projects coming up in the future.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking about putting my festival list together, where I'll send it and why. Mm-hmm. And you've got a cool film festival coming up that we're going to talk about. But before we get into that festival of yours, tell us a bit about yourself. Where are you from? What do you do? And why are you starting a film festival?
Those are all great questions. And thank you for having me on your podcast. I'm a fan myself. So
thank you.
It's a pleasure to be on. I'm from Ohio, Cincinnati, Ohio. And like a little suburb outside of Cincinnati, Ohio. And I've kind of just been an Ohio kid, I guess, my whole life. And I'm sure anybody who's grown up in the Midwest or the American Midwest could probably attest to this. It's not necessarily the filmmaking hub of the United States. It's definitely kind of on the coasts where you find a lot of films and filmmakers and the film industry, obviously. Of course, we have film schools and we have filmmakers around where I live, which I live in Dayton, Ohio now. But I guess the whole kernel of me wanting to make a festival is just from me being a filmmaker living and working in Ohio and wanting to bring more attention and to cultivate more of a film community within my regional milieu or, you know, where I live. I'm a filmmaker and I know several filmmakers in the area. And I just want to present their films and showcase their films and really kind of just grow this festival as the years go by. And I guess I should probably say the name of the festival before we go a little further into it. It's the surname. It's Catalano Film Festival.
Nice.
And it's going to be an annual thing. It's going to be in Ohio, Miamisburg, Ohio, which is in between Cincinnati and Dayton, Ohio, for anybody sort of familiar with the area. It's in Southwest Ohio. I think it's got huge, huge potential to be a major film festival that will, you know, hopefully rival some other ones in the United States. Because as I'm sure you know, Damian, the film festival circuit for any aspiring filmmaker or somebody who's been down this road before can be kind of a, for lack of a better word, scams. Mm-hmm. Really kind of dig through them, do your own research and figure out which ones are legit, which ones are actually showing the film on a big screen, which ones are online festivals, which ones are just God knows what, you know what I mean?
In someone's living room.
Exactly. It could be somebody's living room and you're paying, you know, some crazy $50 admission fee. And, you know, and that's just for, and they charge that per category. So it's really kind of a good money-making scheme for a lot of people. but I don't feel cynical towards cinema. I don't feel cynical towards film. I don't want to profiteer off of filmmakers who probably already poured their heart, their soul, and their money into their films. It's not a, especially with short films, these are not money-making for most of the filmmakers. These aren't money-making vehicles. These aren't films that are, you know, it's not like Avatar, you know, where it's making like $430 million and that's still not enough, I guess. No, these are passion projects for the most part. And these are coming from filmmakers and films of people who truly love the art and craft of cinema. And they want to be filmmakers. And a lot of these short films are more just kind of like proving your work. And they're just kind of proving who you are as a filmmaker and what you have to say to the world. Because all cinema is just one large statement of how you view the world. You know, it's kind of a, you're kind of showing your worldview, your perspective, and it's inherently kind of narcissistic, because you're like, this is how I see the world, and I want other people to see the world like this.
Do you think it's like that completely now? Because what I'm finding is, especially at the film festival I went to with my friend, I mentioned, it's like a lot of people are putting together projects. It's like people are saying, well, I've watched this film and it made a lot of money, so I'm gonna make a film just like that so I can make a lot of money.
That's a shame. That is an incredible shame. And I'm really glad you brought that up, Damien, because I'm not very old necessarily, but I've been working as an independent filmmaker for a good 2 years, and and I've had experiences in those 2 years, and I've developed to an extent who I am as a filmmaker. And I always tell, like, I've been to colleges and spoke before, and it's like, I always tell them, don't do that. Like, see what's popular. Don't watch, you know, some short that, you know, got this one filmmaker, maybe like a huge studio movie or whatever, and be like, oh, I'm going to do exactly that, and it will happen for me too. Cause that's not bringing anything interesting to the table. And the reason why that filmmaker maybe took off after that short was because they were doing something that was unique to them at the time. You know what I mean? But you can't just replicate. And I know exactly what you mean. Like, you see a lot of kind of like, I'm not denouncing genre stuff, because I love genre stuff, but you see a lot of people, you know, making, I don't know, some horror short or some, like, you know, black comedy oddball thing. Because that's what's worked before, and that's what's got people in their foot in the door. But you can tell when something's not honest. And I think that the one thing I admire most about cinema and the films that I love is honesty, I think. If a film is coming honestly out of you and from you, the audience will know. And I think people will respect that in the end, is your honesty as a filmmaker. And that's what I always tell people, is like, just to be honest with who you are. Like me, myself, like, I love, like, I grew up loving genre cinema. I grew up loving Westerns. I grew up loving, you know, war movies, crime movies, gangster movies. A little later on, horror movies. I got really into them, and I had all plans to be a genre filmmaker. But by the time I came around and made my first short film, Funeral for Fromansky, it ended up being a very claustrophobic family drama with a little bit of black comedy, and there's no really genre elements in it whatsoever. And all the stuff I've written thus far, they've had, you know, inklings of genre, but I've discovered when I try to write a genre film, it doesn't work for me. Like I've tried, and maybe it's the mechanics of genre films that doesn't connect with me as a writer.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Why do you say that? Because I have that trouble as well.
It's really hard to say. I think it's just that it comes back to that honesty thing, you know. Is what I have to contribute to cinema more genre, like the genres that I love, you know? Is it me just trying to synthesize genres that I grew up on and trying to make them myself? Or should I write films that are coming purely from the heart and coming from my experience and coming from the people I know? And so like all my writing has essentially been a slice of life movies about where I'm from in Ohio and kind of just following that. And those pour out of me. I write those in like 2 weeks, you know? And I've tried to write, like I started this Western and it was like it was a very unique kind of Western, I guess. It wasn't like a run of the mill type Western, but I still was really struggling writing it. I was like, I was telling you earlier, like it was the mechanics. It was the, you have to almost deliver the goods when you're writing a genre piece. But when you're not, you're kind of freewheeling, you know, when you're writing, kind of a slice of life or maybe just like a mundane black comedy or something like that.
For those of us that are not from, Ohio, Cincinnati, Ohio,
yeah,
and live outside by the suburbs.
Yeah.
I mean, I live in, you know, in London.
Sure. But
it's like a London suburb, you know, loads of parks where I live and stuff like that. Other places may be in like a kind of really crazy place or whatever.
Sure.
So what is a slice of life like for you when you write a screenplay for a film? And is there a film that you've written that you can tell us about that is associated to a slice of life for Johnny?
Well, that's an excellent question. And I'd just like to say first, I visited London for like the first time in 2021.
Nice.
Absolutely loved it. And the BFI was, you know, oh my gosh, I saw Frenzy at the BFI in London at South Bank, I believe.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh my gosh. That was one of the best film experiences I've ever had. But back to the point, I suppose. A slice of life for me is, so for example, I guess the one I'm writing, well, the one I just wrote has actually some thriller elements to it. But in the beginning, it's called The Polish Mother, and it's about a Polish American mother and her son kind of living in Dayton, Ohio. And it all starts kind of with very mundane slice of life type narrative. Like you almost don't really know where it's going because it's so mundane. And then midway through something kind of shocking happens, but it's kind of, it's almost dealing in that idea, everything is normal until it's not. And then after that event happens, the two try to live their mundane Midwestern life once again, which is very much revolved around what are we doing for dinner? You know, what are, and what are we getting from the grocery store? Stuff like that. And it's just, it's very kind of mundane, like what are we watching on TV?
The real life, yeah.
The real life stuff, the feature I'm working on producing at the moment, and this will be my first feature, and it's called Sunday Dinner, and it's basically about a con man living in nowhere Ohio, essentially, and he owes a lot of people a lot of money, and he has to go about town trying to find that money in the course of one night. And he goes to his old flames and they turn him away. So he has to go to his sister's house or trailer, I should say, because they're kind of salt of the earth type family. And he has to, then they're estranged. So there's that drama. And then she has a special guest coming to dinner because she's a call girl. So, and it kind of divulges, or I guess, you know, crazy stuff happens from there. And I guess,
I could imagine.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess a better way to describe, I guess, my work is the banal and mundane darkness that lies underneath living in the Midwest, I guess. Because there's always a darkness. There's always dark things that happen. There's always extreme things that happen where I live, but on the surface, it can seem very boring and mundane and slightly comedic, just the way things are.
So what are some of the dark and extreme things that have happened that you've put into a script?
Well, obviously, for lack of, I mean, murder, and, wow. Kind of sexual oddities. And just stuff that is, that almost like throws you, you know what I mean? Like the story is going so normally and so kind of boringly, but when that thing happens, it's completely shocking and you don't really know how, or at least I want it to be. and you don't really know where it's going from there. Like my short film, I guess, Funeral for Fermansky, which is on YouTube for anybody who would want to watch.
Right.
It's on my YouTube, Johnny Catalano.
We'll put that in the show notes so everyone can see.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's it's a first short film. So it's like, it's obviously no first short film is perfect, but I think that the ideas are there, and pretty much like my style and who I am as a filmmaker is there, because it all starts kind of mundane and then it divulges into the family completely annihilating each other through verbal abuse and just everything coming out. It's almost like a Eugene O'Neill type situation. And I wrote it long before I ever kind of discovered Eugene O'Neill. But I've no long fine. Since realized I pretty much plagiarized them.
I think a lot of the top filmmakers plagiarize. I won't name names, but some do.
sure, of course.
A lot more obvious than others, let's put it that way.
Yeah. And it's a very, all my stories are simple, I suppose. Like Funeral for Fermansky is a very simple setup. It's a simple plot, but it really kind of digs deep into family drama, I suppose, for lack of a better word, and just family. I mean, nobody says worse things to you than people in your family or people.
Oh gosh, yeah.
Or people that you love. I mean, it could be, nobody breaks your heart more than people that you love. I mean, that's just the honest truth. And in that film, you know, there's obviously, you know, issues that I have because it's a first short film, but I think there's honesty in it. And that's something that I've looked back at and I'm proud of, you know? And that's what I've come to realize I really love. Like, I saw not for the first time, but I saw Nashville at a movie theater, where I'm from in Yellow Springs, which is actually where, Dave Chappelle lives.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
And, yeah.
You bump into him? Sorry.
I've seen him before. I've seen him before. He kind of just hangs out on the street and, smokes his cigarette and, you know, drinks his coffee or whatever. He's a very down to earth type dude.
He must have a lot of security with him, or
no, believe it or not. No. Yellow Springs is a very like small town. It's like the, I hope nobody's offended who lives in Yellow Springs, but it's kind of like the hippie town of Dayton, Ohio. You know, it's kind of a small town. It's got a little art theater. It's kind of just like the cool kind of, you know, hip place. And so he lives there. But I saw it at Yellow Springs, and I was watching Nashville, and just the way Robert Altman, you know, paints his characters and the way he uses his camera, there's just so much honesty in it. He doesn't use the camera as some dramatic tool. He uses the camera to just capture what is happening. And that's what I've learned I want to do cinematically, especially with my cinematography, is always be objective with the camera. I never want to be subjective with the camera. Whether the subjectiveness of the camera is like Cassavetes type, where it's just moving in and out, or if it's just static. Like I've fallen in love with static camera movement and kind of just very stagey, I suppose, type cinematography.
Excellent. And the things regarding cinematography and the ideas you have around directing and writing and realism, is that what you're hoping for from filmmakers who send their films into your festival?
Absolutely. And that is the films, I think, well, at least I believe I want to strive towards. But I've received films that are also not just reality, but are abstract. There's a lot of kind of like experimental abstract films. There's a few, I suppose, closer to slice of life type films. And then, you know, there's, I can't point to one, and this isn't like on purpose, but I can't really point to one genre film in the festival. When I say genre film, I guess a lot of people can be like, well, every movie is a genre. Well, of course, yeah. But like genre as in like, you know, the major players, like horror, you know, Western, all that type of stuff. There's black comedies. But I think what the general focus of the festival is that is just auteur-driven films from my area. So films that have a distinct cinematic and specific language that the filmmaker utilizes. Because there are, believe it or not, whether you live in London, Los Angeles, New York, Minnesota, Kansas, there are filmmakers, there are artists in every single place in the world. And they may not have the same means as people in, say, Los Angeles or New York or one of the other big film hubs of the world, but they still have a voice, and I think that's what matters. I mean, if you look back at some of the great early films of, say, Scorsese or Abel Ferrara or some other filmmakers, you know, Spike Lee, whoever it might be, their early films may not have been technically there, you know. They may have had their technical issues, but there was a voice behind it from the very get-go. There's a voice behind it from the very start.
Absolutely.
And that's what I'm focusing on. And not to say, like, we live in a world, obviously when those guys were coming up, they didn't have the same technology that we do now. So we have the means to make our films look very good, sound very good. You know, we are living in a, you know, good and bad world for that reason, I guess. The films look great and they sound great. But most importantly, and this is what's most important to me, this may not be what's most important to other people. But for me, most importantly, it's the voice behind it. Even if the film might have, you know, one or two technical errors or, you know, something that the filmmaker's like, oh, I hate how this scene looks or sounds or whatever. it still has a voice behind it. And I think that's truly what I'm looking for in the Catalano Film Festival.
I'm glad to hear that. I really am, because, you know, I've come up, I mean, hey, I've been watching films for a while and been going to festivals and stuff, but I've kind of put some new rules in place.
Yeah.
And it's like, if a film, if I don't feel the film has a voice,
Yes.
I'm not even going to clap for it. that sounds horrible, but I just kind of think.
It's true. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the amount of work, time, effort that goes into to making a film, to not have a voice, I just kind of think it's despicable now. Especially as there's so much going on in the world.
Yeah.
And like you said, those real things, man, like,
yeah,
those real things in your own suburban area, or if you live in a really busy place. And I just, at the last festival I went to, I just kind of thought, no, I'm not clapping. Because I literally don't believe anymore that people should say, well, I've made a film and it's hard to do. Mm. And I think, well, yeah, it's hard to do, but you have to have a voice. Because again, like you said, when Spike Lee done She's Gotta Have It, for example, that would have cost quite a bit of money compared to what it would cost to make now.
Sure.
You know, the technology has put us in a place where we can make.
We could make that, yeah.
Yeah, we can make that.
Yeah, because he shot on film.
Yes.
And
we can use our phone if we want.
Absolutely. We could use our phone, and we could, it like I said, it doesn't matter what you shoot it on. It matters who's shooting it, who wrote it, you know? And I think what you were saying, and what I don't want to say despise, because that's probably a strong word, but if I'm being honest, I sort of do, is broadness in cinema. If I could tell a film, like you were saying, is broad and it's just like has no specificity to it, or a voice or an author, it just doesn't interest me. And that's even with mainstream films. Like, if I can't really read the authorship behind it, it doesn't really, and there's something weird about that with cinema, where like we really, I think people who love films like yearn for an author behind a film. Like they like the big, like, I guess like Marvel movies or whatever, like you're just like kind of just sitting through it, like, okay. And then, you know, and then
perfectly put. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And then, you know, and I'm not saying I love this movie per se, but I saw, you know, the latest Avatar. And it's just as big as those Marvel movies. It's ginormous. And it costs a ton of money. And you probably could have made a lot of great independent films.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
But I guess my point is, there is an author behind it, whether you like the authorship or not. At least when I was watching it, I'm like, okay, this is James Cameron. You know what I mean? Like, this is what James Cameron likes to do. it may not be for me, but I get it, you know? And that for me was more of an engaging viewing, than say, I don't want to knock any movies, but you know,
yeah, I get
the latest Marvel release, you know,
I completely get what you mean in that front. Mm-hmm. But before, I mean, the time's gone so quick, but before we kind of wrap things up and everything, tell us, what will one of the local filmmakers, in your opinion, get out of being a part of your film festival?
I think what they will get, and this is a first year, so the focus is on local and regional films. And as the years go by, I'm saying in the next like 5 years, we want to grow to a worldwide festival. So like, you know,
wow.
Telluride, you know, was a small town that nobody knew about, you know what I mean? And then the festival came there, and then look where it is now. It's a ginormous festival, you know, and filmmakers from across the world go there, connect, network, and all that type of stuff. But to point to your question, I think what local filmmakers will get is just celebrating their cinema, celebrating their art. Because when we live in Ohio, when you live in the Midwest, Midwestern United States, for anybody who's not like from here, it being in the arts, being a filmmaker, isn't necessarily valued, I guess, as much as some other things.
Yeah, I understand what you mean.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's similar in many places. But when you say to somebody in Dayton, Ohio, that you're a filmmaker, they're like, okay, all right. You know, so
what do you really do?
Yeah, what do you really do? Like, what do you shoot, like, weddings? I'm like, yeah, sure. I just want to celebrate them as artists, make them feel like they are artists because they are, you know what I mean? Like they are artists. And I think a lot of filmmakers, I've had conversations with filmmakers in my area, and they lose sight of who or what they want to do because they live in the Midwest, and like, they're not valued as filmmakers. They're like, oh, you're a videographer editor. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, no, that's not what I describe myself as, a filmmaker. And filmmaker encompasses screenwriting, photography, music, all the above. You know what I mean? That's why I like that term. And that's who these people are. They're filmmakers. And I just want to respect them and value them for the great artists that they are. And it's a great networking event. It's a great networking event to meet other cinematographers, writers, filmmakers, actors in the area, so we can collaborate, because we're only as strong as, you know, all of us combined. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And it is a collaborative experience. Absolutely. When you make films. I mean, there was plenty of self-shooters, and they're good, and you know, I can see why someone would want to do it, but just in my humble opinion, the collaborative experience of meeting a cinematographer, for example, at a film festival and saying, hey, I'm an editor, and then meeting a screenwriter and meeting actors and coming out all together and making a film, it's a beautiful thing, in my opinion.
It's a gorgeous thing, and it's why I wake up in the morning. It's to nice. Create. And even though I do believe that the auteur theory or the authorship theory is a thing, I do also think film is the most collaborative art form there is. You cannot make a film with one person alone. The whole like shoot, cut, and do all that stuff yourself, that can only take you so far. You know what I mean? You need collaboration. You just need it.
Completely. Well, Johnny, thanks so much for coming on. And please do come back once you've done the festival. Tell us how it went, how you enjoyed it, what you would do differently next time, what you wouldn't change, and everything else like that. Because I'd love to know, and I'm sure all the listeners would love to know how it went and when they can submit their films to your festival.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, it's going to grow over the next few years. So just keep an eye on it. And if you're local, just listening to this podcast, like, tickets are on sale now. So if you want to come, it's going to be a huge event. And I just want to thank you, Damien, for having me on and letting me kind of share my story. And I guess I'm kind of sharing other filmmaker story from where I'm from. That's all I want. I just want more stories, more variety. And we can only do that through independent cinema.
If you liked this podcast, share it with friends. Leave a comment in the comment section and hit the subscribe button. Have you thought of upgrading your cinematography game? Would you like to have an ASC cinematographer mentor you for free? Join veteran cinematographer Suki Medenzovic, ASC, Disney, Pixar, FX Networks, Netflix, American Horror Story. As he teaches you how to create beautiful images using three lighting techniques he has mastered on film sets over his 30-plus years in the film industry. Each technique uses basic, low-cost lighting equipment so that anyone can achieve beautiful visuals no matter your project's budget. If you want to take your cinematography to the next level, visit filmmakingconversations.com to sign up for instant access.